Burnout doesn't usually arrive with a warning sign. It creeps in quietly, especially for committed leaders who keep pushing on and putting others first. Welcome to The Debrief Show, the show for leaders to bring out the best in themselves, their teams, and their communications. I'm Dee Clayton, your host, a multi-award-winning executive coach and trainer. And I work with leaders who are often holding a lot together on the outside while quietly running on empty on the inside. Joining me on this show is Derek Thomas. He's a former head teacher and author of From the Classroom to the Climb. And he's someone who has lived through the reality of burnout firsthand. In this episode, Derek shares his personal story of pushing on for years, missing the subtle signs that something wasn't right, and the health wake-up call that made burnout impossible to ignore. We're going to talk about how burnout develops quietly, especially in committed leaders, the moments that signal something is out of balance, and how being forced to stop can change what really matters. So, Derek, welcome to the show. Can you tell us a little bit briefly about your story, please?
Yeah, hi, Dee. Great to be here. And sharing a story that started where I trained to be a teacher and formerly then a head teacher of a primary school in 2014. After the job was becoming very stressful, very demanding, I decided to resign. And I was able to do that because I'd given myself some options, which I'll share with you later.
Yeah, brilliant. So what was it that was sort of stress? I mean, I can imagine working with children would be very stressful. Were there some early warning signs that you could tell that it was getting like towards burnout, or did it just jump up in on you one day? What happened?
Yeah, it's a difficult thing, isn't it? You know, the line, this comes from experience because, you know, burnout doesn't sort of come with alarms and say you're burnt out. It sort of creeps up on you really quietly. You know, you start sort of cancelling plans, you start skipping, you know, the gym, you know, telling yourself, look, I'll rest or I'll exercise after I finish this next project. And before you know it, you start forgetting, you know, even what rest feels like. And for me, one of the wake-up calls was very simple, but it was missing something really, really important. You know, I was in a governor's meeting talking about finances, and we were in a difficult position. And I got a call from my wife because I'd not picked up my son from football, and it was evening. He was only eight. He was left on a football pitch waiting for his dad to turn up. Aww. And it hit me hard. You know, that moment made me realize that my priorities were completely out of sync. At the same time, you know, things that kept me balanced, things like, you know, exercise, as you know, releasing the endorphins and stuff, you know, they'd slipped. And I was missing one session after another, and, you know, it became a pattern. And, you know, you lose consistency. And with that, unfortunately, your energy goes as well. And I was also eating badly. You know, I was skipping proper meals, taking snacks, just too busy. And it started very, very gradually, but became a real habit that was hard to break.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? So if there is a real emergency, we can all do overwork, can't we, for a week, maybe a month, or maybe 2 months, or maybe 5 months. But it's almost like, when is that okay? Really, I can't do any more of this. Because we've all got some potential spare, haven't we, in the tank, but you can't keep giving that month after month. So no. I expect when you first did it, it was sort of fine, wasn't it? Because it was an emergency, or it was just this week or just this project. And I think it's interesting that you don't know yourself when you'd cross that line. It's not clear. Did anyone else around you sort of give you any clues, tell you, could they see it and you couldn't, or was it just...
Oh, yeah. I got that big time when I came down to breakfast one day. My wife introduced me to the children. She said, children, this is your father, because, you know, I was either... Maybe I was absent, and maybe I was present, but not...
Present, but absent.
but I was absent because I was concentrating on other things. And, you know, I got really, I call it getting mad with yourself. And what I mean by that, I made a decision. That's what I call it, get mad with yourself. And I just thought to myself, you know, enough's enough. And I've got to change this. There was also another big thing that got me really thinking, you know, we're at the end of a school year and the budget came through with that the government had actually given the teachers a 4% pay rise. Incidentally, this has happened recently again. So it's repeated itself 10 years later. But what that meant was that they didn't give us the money to fund it. So what I had to make two teachers redundant.
Oh, no.
And because there was no funds to cover it. And I remember thinking, this can't be right. And I'm looking at my staff thinking, these staff work really hard. They're really loyal. And I had to decide who was going and who was staying. And I had this matrix set out. And this is the point, is it? Who was more valuable to the school than someone else? And it was a necessary first in last out. And it was at that point, you know, I had a little side business going and it was working, was building, starting to grow. And I just thought, you know, and I'm just sick of fighting all of this bureaucracy. I was drowning in paperwork. My health was suffering and so was my peace of mind. So I remember Dee ringing up a colleague when we had this announcement and I just said to him, I'm out. That's it. I'm done. I'm finished. And he actually thought I'd lost it because, right. You know, obviously that meant a big income disappearing.
Yeah.
It was going to impact me.
Yeah.
But if it meant that those two teachers keep their jobs and that would have made it even more worthwhile for me. So I did. I said 2014, I handed 300 children back to their parents. Thank you very much. I've loved them to bits, but back over to you. And I just said goodbye and started my entrepreneurial journey.
Wow, fantastic. But I mean, that sounds relatively simple, but what you had obviously thought about that in advance in order to give you the freedom to make that decision, although some people should make that decision for their health anyway, let alone finances. But, you know, but it sounds like you'd thought about it a bit beforehand. How long was that? Was that like a couple of months or a couple of years that you'd been at least percolating a plan in your head?
I had formulated this plan probably 10 years prior.
So you must have known there was either something wrong or you wanted to go a different route. Or
I suffer from focus sometimes. And, you know, I love teaching and I loved all of the all the teaching aspects, but I'm not a bureaucratic person. I'm a person who likes writing essays, certainly books, which I've just completed.
Well done. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute.
A new world. But no, I just, there were certain things I wanted to do. I wanted to do more travel. And also the way education was moving, it was limiting my creativity as well. It was going into testing rather than, I call it experiential learning, making learning fun for children. Mm-hmm. And it sort of clashed. So I just decided, look, you know, if you can build a little a business, a side business, something that will develop in the background, you know, you're going to have choices when you get to that point. And that point was 50. I said I wanted to leave education by 50.
Right. So you had a goal.
But we're still young at 50, aren't we?
Of course. Yes, definitely in my book. So talking about age, tell me a little bit about the health and the energy part of what was going on for you. You had a low point. You weren't exercising, you weren't eating properly. What was going on for you physically and mentally and emotionally then?
You know, what happened next was a massive shock because I thought I'd arrived. I'd left school, I'd left that responsibility. I was at an event in America. One of the governors called me because he forgot I resigned and he was reading out this letter to say the school was having an inspection in 4 years' time. And I was so relieved saying, you know, it's not my responsibility anymore. You've caught the wrong person. I remember, you know, in America, as you're traveling around these hotels and think that the long stairways and walkways and stuff. And I was losing my breath. I mean, I was struggling. I had no energy, feeling faint. And, you know, I thought maybe was a bit of jet lag or it was just the rebound, really, of leaving all that responsibility behind. But when I got back to the UK, went to the doctor, and he tested, did a few tests, and immediately saw that I was in trouble big time. I was quite close to a heart attack, actually. You know, my main arteries were blocked by 80%. Taken straight into hospital, where, you know, normally people go in and get a stent. They basically replumbed me. I had 6 coronary stents put in.
Wow.
And it was a big turning point. You work hard to get to a certain point and want these experiences, but not being in the right place to enjoy them. I thought, you know, it can't be like this. I wanted to see my grandchildren grow up, you know, and, you know, I had a massive purpose and drive about what I did next, which was make a plan, you know.
Yeah.
And this time I decided that I couldn't do this alone. And I think what a lot of, you know, a lot of us, you know, leaders, we're at the front, we're leading. We often feel we've got to make it on our own.
Yeah.
And it's not the case. You know, I hired a personal trainer.
Uh-huh.
Sought his help. He did a plan for myself. I also got a well-being coach as well, because, you know, mentally I was shot, literally. They both worked together in tandem. And, you know, my well-being coach reminded me that, you know, he talked about the oxygen mask analogy on the plane, isn't it? He said, you know, when they come down and you don't put them on the children first, you put them on yourself.
Yeah.
Because unless you sort yourself out, you can't help anyone else. And,
yeah,
you know, I'm a teacher. I want to help everybody, you know, special needs, everybody I want to help. And in business, that is tough, because, you know, sometimes you're working in the wrong areas.
Yeah.
For the results that you want. And I think the amazing thing is I wouldn't consider myself normal, because I tend to go in 100%. Diving off a diving board,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's one, whether it's going to be a neat landing or a painful landing, I will go in 100%. And I did with this project, Dee. You know, within a year, I'd lost about 3 stone. I'd reduced right down to normal,
mm-hmm.
because I also changed the food that I was eating as well. So I became a plant-based eater, which was, you know, the benefits and research I did in that. Or help me get to the point where, you know, I was moving in the right direction. But I think one of the key things was making the plans as well. You know, I decided that, you know, health and well-being was going to be the blue part of my diary. I color-coded the diary into sections, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. But I scheduled my blue time like any other priority. You know, that health and well-being was timetabled in to my day.
Yeah, and that's critical, isn't it? I've got a lot of my clients that I work with, because they're wanting to be high achievers, but they're wanting to achieve more at work. They're doing exactly those old behaviours that you used to do of putting, you know, I'd work hard, I'll get to this place in my career, and then when I retire, I'll go and do this. Well, you're not going to if your health isn't
not
good. And
no,
I was just thinking then, Derek, gosh, if you hadn't stopped that job, that heart attack might well have been...
Oh, I am absolutely convinced that with the workload and the pressures, I wouldn't have had time to go off to see the doctor or to go and get checked out.
Yeah.
It would have been like falling off my perch, you know.
Yeah.
And the one thing that really helped me as well, and I'm not sure if you're actually aware of this book, it's by a guy... called James Clear. It's called Atomic Habits, you know, where you learn to lock in routines, and, you know, it's about developing consistency.
Yeah.
And we used to say in school, if it's not in the diary, it's not going to happen.
Yes.
And that's exactly what I did. You know, I put that slot in there, gym session with Owen, boxing at this time, you know, it was timetabled, or a call with Tristan, who was my mental well-being health coach, where we were looking at food, different types of food, and I timetabled myself in making that food.
That's so important, isn't it? And that's the Stephen Covey stuff as well, isn't it? The step and habit, that's putting in the rocks in place in your calendar, making sure that you are the rocks, not everybody else, but your health or your holidays or your well-being or your food preparation or your gym. So that's your blue time, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's about protecting your time. So if someone rang me up and said, look, you know, if I had a gym, I'd plan to do a gym session, rang me up, I need help and support with this. I said, no, I've already got an appointment. And that appointment was with myself.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't tell them I've got a gym session. I just say I've already got an appointment. And any appointment in the diary that I can't shift.
Yes. Whereas if it's blank, you just go, oh, yeah.
Yeah,
no,
I can fit that in.
Yeah,
I can fit you in. I'll move that. And then suddenly you're moving an important part away. And I've had something like Green for the Family. So, you know, that football pitch incident. You know, I'd find out if the children had things on. You know, it was timetabled in, you know, and so I knew that time was dedicated for something I had to do with some of my family. And yeah, and then I had, Purple for my Purple, I call it my Purple business. So the whole idea, after years of scheduling everything for everyone else, but never for me. And after my health scare, I just realized that had to change. So I made that non-negotiable.
Brilliant. And I think that's so important for other leaders and other people to hear that message to, you know, if you've got something, go to the doctor. I mean, I must have talked to lots of people who say, oh, I feel I haven't been to the doctors, or I'll do that later. And I'm always going, you've got to do it now. I set it sometime for some of my clients. I go, that's your home play, is to go to the doctor and sort out that thing that's been niggling you for.
Absolutely. You know, and I think the important thing here is that you're showing up for yourself. Mm. You show up for yourself and rather than for everyone else. And, I started to get my energy back. I started to get my focus back as well. And things started moving in the right direction pretty quickly. You know, a lot of people thought, oh, you've lost so much weight there. Are you ill? And I said, no, I was ill.
Yes.
I know. I mean, my body caught back up with me in terms of, when you lose weight quickly. I felt energized and certainly I was sleeping a lot better.
Fantastic. And I think I've only known you since seeing their healthy Derek, but I see you full of energy all of the time. So
I'll send you an unhealthy one, a pitch.
So tell me about, how did the climb thing, you decided to climb Kilimanjaro? That sounds like quite an ask from where you were with your health journey.
What I tended to do, Dee, is that because I knew that it's so easy to fall out of habits, what I decided to do was to put this goal in front of me, this goal of climbing this mountain, which you just don't turn up. You don't just rock up and do it. Literally, you have to put the training in on a regular basis and get yourself fit for that challenge. And by doing that, you're maintaining the things that are important. You know, like I'd always say to myself, oh, do you know what? I've got to do a training session today. And I changed the wording of that, because having to, you know, when you've got to do something, I now say my body deserves a training session today.
Yeah, nice.
You're doing what you deserve.
Yeah, sometimes I say got to get to. I get to do a training offer.
Yeah.
I get to go to Kilimanjaro. Yeah, fantastic. So what did the climb teach you about balance and maybe leadership as well, but balance or leadership, what did it teach you about that?
It taught me, you know, what it taught me was life-changing, because the things I learned during that expedition, you know, it taught me that, you know, preparation and teamwork are everything. And on top of that, you know, that you can't do something like that alone. You need faith that the people around you are going to help you get there. You know, we had great support. We had that in bucket loads, the guides, the porters. There were times when we struggled. It's about acclimatizing and altitude sickness, you know, and the guides were really experienced, you know, hand on the shoulder, look, just slow it down, just take it down, take the pace down a little bit, one step at a time. And that little word of encouragement. And I think as leaders as well, you know, we should be spotting this stuff with people. Look, don't feel you need to be keeping up with person A, B or C. Let's look at you. Let's just take this a little pace a little easier and just catch your breath. you know, because people do push themselves so hard. You know, for me, you know, it's not about pushing hard. It is about pacing yourselves. And the real battle is actually not the mountain. I mean, the real battle is the mental noise around it telling you that you're too tired, or you're too old, or that, you know, you've gone far enough. You know, you're constantly battling these little voices in your heads.
It's actually quite a dangerous thing to do, right? I mean,
a lot of people die on the mountain. A lot of people die on the mountain. One, they lack because of the lack of preparation. Two, they're not listening to their bodies. Okay. So yeah, that voice say you're tired, but we can always do more than we feel we can. The deaths on the mountain aren't always publicized for obvious reasons, but you know, people die on the mountain, young people. But I think like any journey, you know, being uncomfortable, you know, we always want to try and I always say that you never achieve anything in your comfort zone. To achieve things, you've got to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And it's not always going to be an easy journey. But as a team, you know, and I remember that final where I was absolutely exhausted. I saw these little lights ahead and they were like zigzagging up the mountain. I thought, oh, I'm not sure I'm going to make this. But just kept taking that step. And then it's 6:24 when we arrive at the top, and I turned around and I could just see the sun coming over the horizon. It just lit up the landscape across the glacier. And it was one of those views you'll never, ever forget. And it was a sort of this team effort that got us to that point. And, you know, one of the biggest lessons of all, I think, is that when you finally reach the top of whatever you're climbing, you realize something really, really powerful is that you never climb alone. You know, that climb to whether you're in a business or whatever, it's the team you're working with that help you get there as a group. There's a whole talk I could do on, you know, we herd together, you know, we were designed to herd together, not do things on our own. So
yeah, and I think a lot of high performers want to do it on their own or think they shouldn't ask for help. And I know that you say that asking for help is a sign of strength, isn't it, rather than a weakness?
Absolutely. And also any strong business, you know, I always remember in our company that I would go up in a lift, I saw this little sign and it said, if you've got an idea that would help this business move forward, it doesn't matter whether you're the cleaner, the porter or whatever, you know, they wanted to hear it. They called it Piggy Den, you know, like Dragon's Den. And they had the nice award. If it was chosen, it was successful. They went to New York for a weekend with their partner. And I think sometimes that we think we need all the answers. Well, you know, we don't. You know, a good leader realizes they don't have all the answers, and that vulnerability to know that, you know, if you can include people in your mission, whatever it is, they buy into ownership of that as well. So as a team, you have ownership.
Fantastic. So I'd love to carry on talking forever and hear that talk you're talking about, but we are coming to the end of the chat now. So I just wanted to ask really about how you can help other people move into action. Maybe somebody listening is feeling stuck or exhausted, or they're skipping their meals and they're not putting their own oxygen mask on first. Is there a small tip or a small step you can say, maybe from your book, From Classroom to the Climb? There's some tips that you've got there for listeners. What can they do? Just that small step.
I think pole pole, which is slowly, slowly. You know, we live in a microwave society, don't we? We want instant results, instant weight loss, instant finance improvements, instant. And things take time to build securely. It is how we got to the top of our mountain, definitely. But I use something called mini, midi, maxi. Okay. There are times when you're under pressure and sometimes you can only do a mini activity, a mini step towards it. Other times when you've got more time, a midi step, or then all in and a maxi step. But the consistency that develops by not dropping it, it's a bit like going uphill on a bike. You know, sometimes you just turn it or just hold, sometimes just holding the tension.
No, it's good enough.
Still, but the moment you take your foot off that pedal, it's easy to roll back.
Yeah.
So just do that little step If suddenly you're looking, oh, crumbs, that's what's the finishing product there, that can intimidate you and even taking that first step. So just take that first step, that little step, that or a couple of steps. Or if you're out there for, and I do this in a running analogy, you know, go out for a 10-minute walk or a 20-minute jog or an hour's steady-paced run. You know, it doesn't matter as long as you do those things.
Yeah, you're reminding me of my Machu Picchu journey now. And there was, yes, it was really hard. Not anywhere near your Kilimanjaro, but yeah, it felt really, really difficult because of the lack of oxygen. And literally I was going about 10 meters before I had to stop. But yeah, you carry on and you carry on. Fantastic. Now, I know that you've got a free PDF guide for people if they want to just take a few more steps. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I've written a book actually, as we've been talking about. It's called From the Classroom to the Climb, Lessons in Resilience and Growth. And it talks about changing path, strategies for overcoming challenges, and in it, you know, how to avoid burnout. And there's a PDF I've got available there for people. So maybe you could put that into the link. It's derek-thomas.co.uk/get-my-book. Even if they don't want to buy the book, they'll get the first chapter free, but also they'll get the PDF free as well. So
yeah, I've downloaded it and it's great. It's 5 powerful steps to avoid burnout and take control of your life. So that's definitely worth downloading, and they can get a feel for your book as well. And all the profits from your book are going to charity, I hear.
They are. And that's a story in itself. But you'll find that out in the book. But from a young lad at 10 who had major challenges is now helping that 10-year-old in a small classroom at the base of Kilimanjaro. Because what we want to do is they're orphans and vulnerable kids. But we want to try and sort of spark up their curriculum a little bit. So put an entrepreneurial aspect to it. So mini projects that are going to get them working independently rather than just learning basic, you know, arithmetic, writing skills. It's about putting things into context. And we're moving into a different world, aren't we? With the advancement of AI, and education is going to change massively. The jobs that are now available will not be there for them in 10 years' time.
So you're setting them up for success.
Yeah, it's in a way monetizing their skills. You know, they're great artists. We can show them ways in which they can promote their art, sell their art, not just within their own countries. Because when we did that climb, I'd go into a shop and they're selling you the art, but how to put that onto through social media. So creating, teaching them how to fish, basically.
I wish I had that in my school, Derek. That sounds fantastic. Thank you so much. We're coming towards the end of our time. Is there anything I've missed that I really should have asked you? Is there one last thing? You don't need to say that there is, because we've covered so much. But let me know if there's any question I should have asked you or anything you want to make a comment about that we haven't covered, Derek.
Well, the last thing I'd just say is that most people ask themselves the questions, you know, I don't know if I can do this. Well, the reason why you can do it is because you're worth it. Okay, you are worth it. And you would be surprised at what you can achieve when you do that thing. You get mad with your situation and you make a decision. And that's all I'd say. And why should you do that? Because you're absolutely worth it. And it's strange how things knock on. You know, you might be helping someone else in the world one day. So, you know, it's not about the job that you want to do, but maybe the problem in the world that you want to solve.
I love that. Gosh, that sounds like a whole nother podcast in itself. Thank you so much for your time today, Derek. It's been lovely talking to you. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. We really appreciate you joining us. And a big thank you for Derek, especially for being so open in sharing his story. You'll find more information, including all the links and the link to Derek's book, From the Classroom to the Climb, in the show notes. We've got one link for you too. If you want to find out more about the Debrief Show and listen to some of our other amazing episodes, that link is linktree.com/dclayton, linktr.ee/dclayton. So if you'd like to listen to more episodes, please join us there. And if this episode resonated with you, please follow the show and share it with someone else who might be interested and might recognise parts of themselves in Derek's story. Join me next time for another honest conversation about leadership, communication, and what really matters. And in the meantime, keep bringing out the best in yourself, your teams, and your communications.